Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference. I am so thrilled to have Holly Medwid on the show today, all the way from Toronto, one of my favorite places, or quickly becoming one of my favorite places to meet people from. Holly, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So I'd love to hear about your background. You have your own agency now,
yes.
But you've had other jobs along the way. And so I want to hear about your transition, what got you into the wide world of digital, and what brought you into starting your own business.
Ooh, a lot of questions. What got me into digital? I honestly had no intention in university of going into digital or any sort of marketing. I'll be honest, I fell into it because of social media. So I was going to school to become a writer. I was in studying English and to become a creative writer. And so to practice the craft of writing, I had a block for going back, 12, 13 years now. There was no influencer, really. It was bloggers. And so I would write about things that were happening around Toronto, restaurants, events, that sort of thing. And it did well. And so I was approached by a company called thetorontopath.com, which is in Toronto. There's actually an underground shopping center that connects all of downtown. It's about 30 kilometers, give or take.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's really cool. So they asked, can you do this as a job? If you do our social media, we'll pay you. And so I was putting myself through school and the university is expensive. So I said, yes, I started doing their social media and I was in class and one of my professors went, Holly, if you don't pay attention in class, you're never going to get paid as a writer. And it just was this light bulb moment. And I said, I'm getting paid to write now. I'm writing tweets and they're paying me to do this. So I left university and that's really how I started in social media. They gave me a full-time job. And then from there, it was just a series of opportunity and experience. So I freelanced for a little while in social media. I was approached by a hotel company to come in and manage their digital marketing. I had 7 hotels under my portfolio in downtown Toronto. So I grew as a digital marketing manager in that respect for about almost 3 years. And then I switched to head of growth marketing for a startup in the mortgage space. And then just a year into the pandemic, I realized that I'd given away over $30,000 worth of consulting for free because I had so many business owners reaching out and saying, hey, what do I do? How do I do social media? I need to bring in business still when my storefront is closed. It was a really easy decision for me to say, okay, I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to start an agency to do this for businesses because it's needed. And at the same time, my family has a wild rice processing plant. Yeah, so we processed wild rice and they really needed to bring it to market. So I also came on board to run their marketing department as well.
Amazing. There are so many things that I want to discuss in what you just shared with us. One is education. Now, I am also a university professor. I also am in university getting my MBA. But on my day job, I also work for an agency that focuses on workforce development and adult education. So skill building for the jobs that we know are out there that nobody knows about or nobody wants to take, that you don't necessarily need a 4-year or longer degree for. So it's a hard thing because I see that the reason I'm valuable as a professor is because of my knowledge from being in the field and practice. And that is exactly what you're talking about here, where you're going to school to get a degree in something that you really want to pursue, but you're already practicing it in real life. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that push-pull between getting your degree, right? Having that certification, being able to say, I have this diploma, and being in the world of work.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of parents are not going to like what I'm about to say. If you have kids that are in high school and going into university, I believe that in social media specifically, and within digital marketing, you can't go to university for it, and you shouldn't. And the reason why is because these platforms change every single day. And I really do mean every single day. You have to get into the habit of learning on your own and not relying on an institution to teach you, because you learn by doing and you learn by staying up to date with the education that those platforms are providing. And 9 times out of 10, they're providing it for free. You can take certifications in Google, in Meta, in SEMrush, in affiliate marketing platforms, and all of that exists for free. So I think that university has a really important place in our society still when it comes to certain professions. And, you know, even from a traditional marketing background, you could absolutely learn very, very valuable concepts within university by pursuing the marketing direction. But when it comes to social media, I actually won't hire somebody if they told me they went to school for social media.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Well, it tells me that, you know, I want my team members to embrace the concept of learning every single day. I do. Right now, I have one more exam to take before I become certified as an affiliate. Our agency becomes an affiliate pro for a certain really popular platform for affiliate marketing. So it's really, especially with AI, it's really important if you're going to work in social or digital in general, that you just, you embrace the fact that you're going to be a student for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I can say that is 100% true.
Yeah.
Because I was out of it for a while. And then when I popped back into the world of PR and marketing for clients, for, you know, not just for my own brands and companies, gosh, the landscape has changed. It continuously changes, like you said. And even just AI, we weren't really talking about it 2 years ago, even though it existed. And then in, for the past year, it's been what everybody's trying to figure out.
I wish it's really, yes. And it's fascinating to watch. The best way I can explain AI, and I heard it at the Collision Conference last year, AI is our generation's version of the calculator. And that's the way that
perfect.
Because it's so funny. We're starting to see this like outrage of, oh no, AI is going to replace us. And I'm going, have you interfaced with it? Like, have you used it? If you use it in your work, you will be the first one to say, no, it's going to make me faster at my job. It's going to weed out mediocrity, but it is not going to replace me, because I'm sure that you've interfaced with AI quite a bit.
Oh, yes. Daily.
Okay. So yeah, exactly. The hallucinations that happen with AI, like you have to watch out for the limitations, the incorrect information, outdated information. Like, the learning model is not perfect. This is not a perfect solution that replaces human thought. I'm still human behind it saying, no, that's not the emotion that I'm going for. Mm-hmm. You can't say enhance every single time you come out with an F.
I love that you're saying that, because I was talking to a team member recently about that, and we were trying to come up with a new name for a workshop. And I put it, of course, through AI. And she's like, yeah, every social media post I'm seeing, it uses these two words right now. Like, ChatGPT really loves these two words, so stay away from them. And yeah. I just thought, yes, that is so funny. Or sometimes even for the podcast, when I look over my show notes, like, I didn't interview two people. Why is it trying to say that there's a third person in this? It's actually, we were talking about somebody else and their work. And for some reason, AI decided, oh, there was another guest. So it's definitely not foolproof. But like you said, it should be used to help our work get better. That's what we use calculators for, right? It's a little bit of a shortcut, but it doesn't mean that you have to take the human element out of it completely.
No, and it's actually something we've been testing in the past month is what happens when we write content with our manual brain. We call it our manual brain, joking, because it's kind of what it is. If we just rely on our manual brain to write content versus use AI, and I'm testing it, and the results from an organic standpoint are staggering. But if I compare that to paid advertising, because, you know, you're using machine language that's talking to a machine, and my cost per click is actually lower when I use AI language.
Really? Okay. Yeah, that's fascinating. And that's another question I wanted to ask you, because you have done so many different things. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of people who start in social media who also are experts at growth marketing and paid. There are nuances in all of these different roles that you've held and how you've developed your agency. And so how did you decide to move from one to the other? Was it because a great opportunity, or just because you wanted to be that lifelong learner and learn something new?
I would say it actually came from a place of need and having the attitude of, I don't know, but I'll learn. Again, it goes back to that. And not to disparage established corporations or these established roles, but I think a lot of the times they don't understand like, what is SEO? What is copywriting? I can't tell you how many times I'll have a recruiter call me with a job offer for whatever it is. And I'm looking at, it's like, okay, director of social media. And I'm looking at, or social media coordinator, whatever their thing is. And it's, they're actually describing five different roles in the job. Right at the lowest, you know, and it's a great rate at $60,000. And you're going, no. So I think that it really stemmed from a place of just having key decision makers above me that did not understand the digital landscape whatsoever. And then having the ability to self-teach and to, okay, if I don't know somebody, something, I'm going to reach out to an expert and learn from them. And to be honest, a lot of what I know is working and collaborating with other experts in their field and learning about things like, when you are uploading images to your website, you have to make sure that you have SEO optimized the file name so the Google spiders can crawl the image name and rank it accordingly. That's a little SEO hack that can make a huge difference in search results, right? So I would say the reason why I can do all these roles is because I've always relied on my ability to self-teach, but also seek out education from the people that are not just preaching, but actually doing the work. Yeah, usually. I'll never call myself an expert. And nobody, when it comes to digital, it's really hard, especially social media. Anytime somebody says, I'm an expert in social media, how? When it changes all the time. TikTok didn't exist 5 years ago. Right?
Yeah. And so, now everybody else is facing what they're doing off of TikTok.
Yeah. Well, that's right. All the platforms are trying to build functionality that TikTok has, and it's a brilliant platform. It's a brilliant platform, and I really like what's happening in this space from a paid advertising's perspective and how it's actually shifting away from perfectly polished content to something that's more relatable. I keep on saying this, that 2024 is the rise of the content creator, because if I run UGC, like user generated content in ads, the results are just night and day different from something that's like highly polished, agency produced, that sort of thing.
Interesting. I might have to bring you in to speak to one of my digital media management classes at USC.
I would love to.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I feel like also when you know a lot about a lot of things, right, that makes you a really good executive, makes you a good agency owner. It doesn't necessarily make you a good employee unless it is a company that doesn't really understand social, digital, and they are trying to cram five jobs into one. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And also, how was that transition for you moving from being an employee to being an employer?
So I'm a bit of a different case. I grew up in business. Actually, I don't think any of my family members really work for anyone. They're all business owners.
Wow.
Entrepreneurs and business owners. And that's going back like five generations of entrepreneurs.
My gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, like that education, my education in business did not come to university. It came through, you know, as soon as I was able to talk, and we were allowed to answer the phone, but the rule was we had to answer it professionally. So it was always, good afternoon, Dauphin Blind Factory, Holly speaking, how may I direct your call? From 5 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So I have to give all the credit to my parents for like really teaching us business and having that real experience. My father owned a window business, so installing windows. My mother ran the window covering business. Now we have different businesses, Wild Rice processing plant, all of that. So I was really surrounded by entrepreneurship. I've never been a good employee. I mean, I'm a good employee because I get results happening, but I'm really bad at having a boss. And I always just, I have never liked it, to be completely honest.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just, I don't like how slow things move in corporate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have to wait, take things up a chain of command. Several people give their opinions.
So. I absolutely see the necessity of that. It's just, I know, like at 35, I know that my personality is not suited to that work environment at all. I know the results that I have and can achieve. And there comes a point where it's like, do I keep on, you know, try to push this or do I just create the atmosphere that allows me to be more agile in the service that I provide?
Wonderful. Now, one of the things that's always changing, of course, is the trends for social media. So what dance, you know, is going on or what competition or what song do you need to put behind your reel or your TikTok video? How much should people balance? If they're a small business, they don't have maybe the money to grow a team. They know a little bit. Maybe they have a couple of tools that they can use to help create templates and things. But how much should they balance information about their organization and their own content versus jumping on the trends?
When you're a business or a brand, trends should not be your strategy. Because if your strategy is to go viral, then you're not understanding the difference between creator strategy and business strategy. You do not, as a business, do you need a million followers that nobody's, you know, maybe 100 people are going to buy your products? Or do you want maybe 10,000 followers and, you know, 1,000 of those people buy your products? You have to really understand who you're speaking to when you run business or brand strategy. Before anything starts, you should be doing work into your target demographic. You should be building persona characteristics or personas based on your existing clientele. And what are the behaviors? What is the demographic data? What is the psychographic data? Where are they spending the most time? How do we get their attention? What do they care about? What questions do they have? That is where you start when it comes to strategy. Does trend play a role in it? Absolutely, but it is not the rule. It is just a way of delivering a message. So if you're an accountant, personally, if my accountant was dancing on TikTok, I would say, why are you dancing on TikTok? It's tax season. Can you please look at what are you doing to, I want to see behind the scenes of what tax season looks like for an accountant. What is something that I could do as your client to make your job easier? What is something I could do all year round so I'm not panicking at tax time? What are some savings? What's some advice that you have about, like, maybe, I don't want to say loopholes, that sounds very bad, but, you know, loopholes that corporations can take advantage of. Same thing with lawyers. Like, I don't really want to hear the baby voice on your video. When I say baby voice, that's a TikTok filter for your voice that makes you sound like a baby. I don't want you to be talking about important, you know, concepts of law, baby voice. Like, you're a professional. Educate me as a business owner, because again, do you need a million people to watch this video, or do you need 1,000 business owners like me to watch it and to consider becoming your client because you educated me or you outlined a problem that I'm having and told me how you solved it? So in terms of trends, make sense for businesses. A lot of them don't. One of the things that we really, the type of clients that we like to take on board, we jokingly call them the unsexy industries. Hey. The reason why is because whenever I interview somebody like straight out of university or that's applying for an internship, I always ask them, like, okay, well, what kind of strategies do you want to work on? I can't tell you how many times I hear makeup and skincare. And I'm going, I hear you, but that's not where the opportunity is. That whole industry, the whole market is oversaturated. What about the law firms, the accountants, the equity firms, the real estate brokerages, the boring industries, right? But at the end of the day, there's a lot of power in, if you're a B2B business and you're about to go to a bunch of conferences and you need to network with a bunch of people, why wouldn't you create a whole bank and a whole campaign explaining your approach, explaining why you got into the industry, talk about your latest deal, talk about how you will solve this problem, allow somebody like us to make sure that that's getting in front of everybody who's going to that conference. And we just made that introduction between you and your next client before you even stepped into that room. That's how businesses need to be thinking about social media.
I so appreciate you flagging this, because I do think so many people think they just have to jump on the latest trend. And that's more important than actually sharing their message with the right audience.
Yeah.
And speaking of right audience, I actually just had somebody email me yesterday, I think. They decided that they want to start doing more videos. And so he was doing videos. I said, okay, these are good, but you need, like, maybe talk about this or talk about that. It's just a friend who's in, you know, has a business coaching business. And that's one of the things I love about the podcast and about other things like this, is that I find these opportunities where we can share information with each other. So for him, he's like, here's my target audience. I said, okay, then obviously LinkedIn is the only place you're going to put these videos, because if you're looking for somebody who's making millions of dollars a year in their business and they're this age demographic, that's a no-brainer, right? I think he was thinking TikTok, Instagram, some other platform, but that target audience is not living on those platforms. And so I think that's something I'm sure you deal with a lot when you're working with clients, is also making sure that they're on the right platform at the right time.
Oh, do we ever. I would like to break it into primary and secondary platforms, because there is a case to be made for having a presence on everything from a credibility standpoint. If you're trying to get in front of people that, you know, upwards of $2 million in business a year, like bigger fish, I guess. Yeah, LinkedIn is probably, professional services is probably where you want to focus if you're looking to target professionals. But they still do use TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, but they're not on there for business purposes.
Right.
So, you know, going back to like traditional marketing principles, the marketing rule of seven, there is still value if they are consuming your content on LinkedIn, but then, you know, maybe it's 8 o'clock at night and you're scrolling through Instagram and all of a sudden another post from your company comes up, even if they don't click on it, then that's another impression that you just generated. An average consumer needs to see your brand upwards of 7 times before they even make it like a conscious decision to go down that consumer journey. Right. Definitely focus on the primary platform as where you're going to do the bulk of your work, but don't neglect the secondary platforms just because they may not be active on there for the purposes that suit your goals from a business perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I always recommend to people when I'm going through branding exercises, reserve the social media for every single platform that you can. You don't want somebody else to steal, to take your name. Right. And you want consistent. That's part of the branding process. So you talked a little bit about how you work with the non-sexy kind of companies. What is the process like when somebody approaches your company? How do you vet them? I'm sure you've had times where you're like, you know what, you might not be the ideal client for us, or you need to do this work before we could work with you.
Yeah, we definitely, I would say, like, we're going into year 3 this spring. And I can say I know the types of clients based on experience that I don't want to work with just because things are not aligned. For me, a gold star client, somebody who I know that I can just hit the ground running with, is somebody who's done their branding. So you have, you know, the look and feel of your brand, but also the key messaging done, the brand voice, the whatever mission statement, all of that, you're well thought out and you understand who your target demographic is. It's very rare that your target demographic is everybody. So it's the brands that are really understanding that success online is not just social media. Social media is really the start of a consumer journey. If we think of digital marketing as a funnel, which that's essentially how it functions, top of funnels are social media, and you need to get as many people in there as possible. And you do that by influencing reach, impressions, engagements, and conversion. Conversion can be a follow. Conversion can be, you know, sign up to my mailing list, which gets into the middle of the funnel, or go to my website so my conversion API is tracking you and I can retarget with ads later. So it's really, really important to understand that piece of things. And the clients that do understand that piece of things, I'm going, okay, now we can get going. The other thing is have a budget for content creation. A lot of times I'll get pushback with, wow, I didn't think it was going to be that much. But if you think about how much do you spend creating a TV commercial? It's a lot, you know, high 6 figures sometimes to have that TV placement. You need to think the same way about digital. And I'm starting to see a shift towards that where brands and businesses are going, okay, yeah, it is worth investing 6 figures this year into just social media and content creation. So having a really robust content bank is important. And one of the things that we really focus on at the agency is having a very large network of collaborators to fill in the blanks for clients that don't have all the pieces in place. And then really just understanding KPIs for social and how it works in their system. I would say that a lot of the times we start with a client, one of the things that I'm really focused on with Monarch is we just do social media. This agency just does social media.
No gross marketing. Yeah.
Back of all trades, master of none when it comes to digital services. So we will outsource other work if it's needed. And I will always do an audit first to say, you know what? I think that you need to actually invest some time into your website and branding, or here's a videographer that can work with you to start creating your content bank, or here's a photographer to come and photograph the experience of your hotel or whatever it is. And then budgets, obviously. It's a really interesting trend to see, especially on TikTok. You have all of these personalities saying, work in social media, you can make $10,000 a month. Yeah. And I'm going, ooh, it's really hard to make $10,000 a month in practice. In theory, yeah, like you could have 10 clients at $1,000 a month and make your 10,000, but really think about what does it take to manage 10 clients? So our retainers really just for presence building start at $2,000 a month and go up from there. And that's a really key piece, is like understand that this is an investment over time. It's not just going to be a 3-month strategy and you're done. You need time to show results. And then the other thing is we like clients to understand the difference between real results and vanity metrics. If you have vanity metrics, we're not the agency for you. I will not buy you followers. I will not. Like, I'm not going to buy you reviews or do all these things that make me look really good, but provide no real tangible results for your business. There's positions on our team where your job is the whole day just to talk to people on social media and build relationships. And that's it. And that part of social media is really important, just as much as the content creation. So,
and so many people leave that out. I was working with a client on PR, and one of my big pieces of feedback, I guess I would say to them, was the brand voice you're using when you're responding to people on social media is not the same as the trusted voice that you want them to see so that they'll buy from you. It was more juvenile. It was more like pushing back. And this is not the way to get people to trust your product when, and this product is all about safety and trust. So it drives me crazy when people forget community management, or they think that, oh, but you're just going on a little bit. Well, no, because you need to follow other accounts. You need to like what people are saying. You need to make sure that you're responding in brand voice to people who are commenting or sending you DMs. There's so much more that goes into it. And it's something that so many people don't even think about.
Well, and that goes into the organic side of things. And, you know, I'm so glad you touched on that, because engagement practices, I would argue, are far more important than going viral. So engagement practices allow us to build relationships with, and we use so many different kinds and different platforms. It doesn't just build relationships with that person. It also signals to the algorithm, this account makes social media users stay in the platform for longer. Therefore, we're going to reward this account with higher visibility and discovery. And what that translates into is, I'm going to look at the data set of this person, and because I'm going to reward this account, I'm going to find other people that match this data set and show their content to those people organically. That's what the name of the game when it comes to social. And that is organic. It is not paid. You can do a lot with paid. You can make the results look amazing. And don't get me wrong, paid is an important part of social media, but organic is far more important. And I really wish that more people focus on the organic side of things.
Well, and let's differentiate. Paid, in this case, is when you are boosting posts, when you're paying for advertising. It is not when you're buying followers, buying likes, buying comments, things like that. So I just want to make sure everybody is very clear who's listening, in case this is not something they're as familiar with, because I have a wide range of people who listen to the podcast. But also, when you do those strategies where you are paying for followers, where you're paying for engagement, in the end, that actually ends up harming your brand, right?
Big time. Yeah. Damage control is a service that we have to offer because of that.
Well,
right? Because now social media users are savvy enough, and you can do it. If you see an account, Instagram's my favorite place to do it on because it's very obvious. And I think that more people are going to realize this, but if I see an account with 270,000 followers and they're verified and everything, you know, wow, 270,000 followers, immediately I'm going to go look at their posts and see how many comments are on content. And when I see three comments, I'm going, oh, your followers are not real. And then I click into the following list and I start drilling down and going, egg, you know, that's a number username with no posts. And you can see that they're bot followers very fast. And this is actually an exercise that I take a lot of people through, and they go, oh my goodness, I can't believe that celebrity has this many fake followers. And I'm going, of course.
Yeah. So I want to ask a question about that, because I have tested things out on my own socials, which probably was not smart, to be able to then say to clients, don't do this as part, like, I don't offer this service as social, right? But don't do this, because this is what will happen. But then I find that even when I go through and try to scrub, like, okay, these look like fake accounts, I'll remove them. But then it seems like I get more fake followers after that. And I'm like, I don't want these on my account, right? Because I want to reach people, because we know with the algorithms are always changing. I mean, Facebook, forget it. I think all I see are ads or sponsored pages they want me to see. I don't see any, you know, I see very few posts from people I know. So I rarely go on. But when you see fake news, or when you see fake followers, or we see too much of that kind of stuff, I think it makes us less inclined to want to go on social or to believe people when they're on social.
Well, and that's, you just hit the nail on the head. Belief. You trust a brand that has a bunch of fake followers? I don't. Because how authentic? Like, are you trying to cheat your way to get me to buy something? Or is this something that people really love?
Right.
And, you know, word of mouth marketing, in my view, is still the most effective way of marketing. And it translates into social media. So when you try to fake those results, it creates distrust. And brand trust is a very important thing.
Exactly.
Brand trust is by actively growing your community and nurturing your community and having a human on the other end to say, oh, so-and-so, happy birthday. We hope you have a great year, because they shared a birthday post. That means a lot to a social media user. You know, even if it's, and that's not for every single brand, but if you're, you know, certain brands, it works for. So that part of things, that relationship building, I really think that not enough focus is put on that side of things.
Yeah. And I have to say, Holly, I've really enjoyed our conversation about organic social. I think this is not a conversation I get to have very often. A lot of times people come on and talk about SEO, they talk about paid, they talk about lead gen strategies, other areas of business, right? And it's hard, I think, for business owners to think, gosh, do I have enough time to figure out my brand voice, to share it on social media organically, to have a community manager, or do I have the budget to hire somebody to be able to do this? But I can't stress enough how important it is.
And, you know, for those business owners, because I realize that not every single business is ready to invest $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 into their social media in a year. I understand that. And that doesn't mean you should be excluded from using this platform. It can be the thing that changes a small business completely. And at the end of the day, if you can't invest the finances in having somebody do it, and you have to hire the right person, that's the other thing, right manager, then yeah, you have to do it yourself and you have to learn those concepts. But it goes back to the start of our conversation. Social media, you can learn on your own. All of that information is out there for free. We've been a little bit slow on posting on the Monarch accounts right now, just because we're in the middle of a huge campaign for one of our clients. But the intention with that account has always been to share education for free.
Nice.
We'll teach you what an engagement practice is. We'll teach you what a call to action is, what a call to engagement is, how to find what, how do we identify a trending sound? Like, what is that? How do you do that? How to create a reel, how to use call to engagements in Facebook to actually get your content seen on that platform, as I'm talking about, and it's challenging. So for like the smaller business owners, we're not hire somebody yet. It's something that we're really putting a lot of focus into, because I do think that there needs to be some kind of easy educational portal for this side of things. You can learn it. Don't think that you can't, but it is going to take time. You have to invest time into it.
Yeah. One of the last things I want to talk about today is the future of digital. I do teach digital media management masters at USC Annenberg. And, you know, the material that we're using, like you said, everything changes so quickly that if we're using an article in their coursework that's assigned and pre-assigned that I don't have control over, it might be an article that's outdated at this point. So I'm always trying to pull in new information. And one of the things I mentioned to one of my classes recently is, think about a future where we aren't going on websites. Everything is a mobile app. And that's a lot of what I'm hearing. And so I'd love to hear what you think of that, and also other future of digital trends or things that you think are people need to be aware of now.
I'm so glad I never get to have these conversations. Okay. Like, I am so excited.
Oh, good.
I love talking about this. I talk about this with my husband all the time. I think the future of digital is in the spatial internet. So I don't think, and we're just starting to see, like, okay, the Apple goggles right now are kind of ridiculous. I'm not going to lie. That's Gen 2. And if you remember what the iPhone started out like, right? And now how it is and how everybody, well, not everybody has an iPhone. There are some Android users, but it's very accessible. It's not unrealistic to have an iPhone. And so I think that the same thing is going to happen for wearable tech and spatial internet. Those virtual experiences are going to become very important. Those virtual spaces, I think it's going to completely change e-commerce.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with AI being built into it. I think that it's going to move from here's our message to here's a message, but personalized for you.
Yes.
And I say this because I was just in a meeting yesterday talking about pathways of a consumer journey and how we influence through personalization.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so important, because the best marketing strategy you can ever run is having your target demographic be able to see themselves in the experience of what you're selling.
Exactly.
And that will happen with Web3, which is, you know, when we stop interfacing like this and start interfacing like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I just had a conversation a couple of weeks ago. I'll have to introduce you to the guy who's doing some pretty cool things with ShopX and AI algorithms for dating. So that instead of being overwhelmed by choice, you just have are given your perfect three choices, then here's why. It's a little Black Mirror-esque, I won't lie, but in the best possible version of that, right?
It's a new frontier. Yes, I think it's really easy to be fearful about what could happen, but it's like a gold rush in a lot of ways. This is uncharted territory, and there is only opportunity if you can see it that way. That's it. And that human element, how are you going to make an impact in that space? It's still going to matter that the human element is added to that, but we're going to be able to create in completely different ways. I think that content is going to become so different and very immersive. So instead of show me, this is my dream vacation, it's like, come on the vacation with me, put on your headset and, you know, let's experience this ocean, experience this night market, whatever it is. And so we get to kind of live vicariously through other people to have those experiences that may not be. Can you imagine what that would do for education if you were learning in Rome and you could walk through the streets? Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think that the future of digital is just so exciting. It's not something to be feared. It's just something to really embrace that attitude of, I'm going to look for every opportunity and I'm just going to go for it.
Holly, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I've enjoyed hearing your perspectives and all of the information that you have to share. There are so many good tidbits that any business owner can take away from this conversation and start action on immediately and start thinking about. So thank you. And I know you said people can follow Monarch Social Media on all platforms, and that's the best way to learn more about your company, who you work with, get tips and tricks that they can use.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are very focused on, if you have questions, ask us and we'll do our best to answer, because we're not gatekeepers of information. We're not going to charge you to, like, if you have a question, just ask us and we'll try to, it gives us content ideas. So it's more than welcome. You can also just find me on LinkedIn, Holly Medwood, and say that you listen to me on this podcast and I'll probably accept the connection.
Fantastic. And I always ask, do you have a favorite quote, mantra, some words of wisdom that you'd like to share?
Yeah, it actually comes from my mentor, and this was at the start of my career, and it's something about leadership. And, you know, I'm really lucky to have an amazing team of women. They are just incredible marketers. But something he said was, you know, give people a swimming pool and throw them in, but always be there with a life jacket in case they need it. Cool. And I think that, you know, I want people that are just going to jump in. If you don't know how to swim, that's fine. You know, jump in and try, and I will be there with a life jacket if you need me. But how do you learn to swim? You learn to swim by doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't even talk about that, because I also, when I built up my PR firm during the pandemic, it was all women and it was the same thing. Like, you can do this. Okay, let's just throw you in. We're all going to do this together. So yeah. I love that. And that this is such a high note to leave on. I've had such a wonderful time on this episode. So thank you for bringing that to us today.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. And to everybody who's watching or listening, thank you. And I'll be back again with another episode tomorrow, if it's the weekend, then on Monday. And this is Annika Jackson signing off from Your Brand Amplified.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.